This is file 31. I'm interviewing Jacqueline Rice at the ambulance garage. She's going to talk about her position as chief of service for the Salisbury Ambulance Service Incorporated. Volunteer Service Incorporated. And the date is October 1st, 2012. What is your full name?
Jacqueline Rice.
And what is your birthday, please?
December 23rd, 1959.
And where were you born?
I was born in Williamstown, Massachusetts.
And your parents' names?
John and Denise Rice.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have a sister, Shelley, and brothers John and Raymond.
And what's your educational background?
My educational background, my undergraduate, I have a BS in physical education and health, and then I went back to school and I have a BS in math and science, and I have a master's in education from Springfield College and a sixth year in mathematics from Wesleyan University. And I'm currently in my PhD program
for public administration. Yeah.
And health services.
How did you get involved with the ambulance service?
I got involved with the ambulance service back when I was a teenager. My neighbors, Ann and Jack Lloyd, who were founders of this organization, were members. And then Michael and David Brenner, although not founding members, were early members of this organization also. And when I was at Yale, taking some classes for my undergraduate, they had an EMT class, and I was, basically told this would be a great way to help out on the ambulance squad by both the Lloyds and the Brenners. And so I took the class with a bunch of New Haven and Hamden firefighters.
Oh, that must have been fun.
It was a lot of fun. They were a lot older than I was. I took it as soon as I turned 18. You couldn't take the EMT class until you turned 18. So as soon as I turned 18, it's not still true. You could take it earlier, but it really, the state recognizes you, but the federal government does not.
Okay. When did you become chief of service?
I became chief of service in 1996.
Six, okay.
I was going to say six.
And how many people in your squad?
Little over 50.
What kind of training does an EMT have to have?
An EMT has about 150 hours worth of initial training, starting with CPR for the professional rescuer and going through all the scenarios of medical and traumatic injuries and, you know, a lot of other things like driver training and hazardous materials and terrorism and all different aspects and little sub-subjects.
I would imagine that because of this area, you would have a variety of things like mountain rescue, water rescue, which is not what you'd find in a city situation.
Correct. We have separate courses on low and high angle rescue for the Appalachian Trail. We have water safety and water rescue classes, not only still, but running water for both the Housatonic River and for like the lakes in the area. We also have snowmobile accidents and sledding accidents. So we also have sleds that you need extra time on. We have an ATV and a gator that you need to learn how to drive.
What's a gator?
A gator is a bigger ATV that has an actual stretcher on the back that we can put a person on it.
How many ambulances do you have?
We own two ambulances, two rescue trucks, and two gators. We have a couple of different trailers. One is a mass casualty trailer, which houses about between 50 and 100 backboards and emergency equipment in some type of mass casualty. We also have a fire rescue trailer and some other, we have a shelter trailer also.
And I think you told me that you also set up the emergency shelters if we have, like we had an October storm last year.
Correct. We have a shelter trailer through FEMA. Mm-hmm. We have 50 cots, 50 blankets, 50 hygiene kits. We have, through the state, all different kinds of the paperwork to open the shelters. Our shelter is at Salisbury Central School, and we've set that up a couple of times now.
As Chief of Service, what do you actually do? How do you coordinate your 50 people?
Well, we're on duty 365 days a year, so, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. We have teams that run during the day, teams that run at night. I delegate a lot of that to our first aid chief and our assistant chief. They do a lot of the duty schedule.
And who are they?
Khaki Schaefer-Reed is the assistant chief, and Patricia Barton is the first aid chief. Michael Brenner is the rescue chief. And Francis Yerkes is our secretary. Kathy Hawley is our bookkeeper. Basically, I run, you know, I'm like the CEO of the company here. And paperwork, filings with the state, filings with the federal government, I do all of those. Keep the peace kind of thing. Make sure that everyone has the correct certification. Make sure that whatever we need, we find. Equipment and all of that. Grants. I do a lot of grant writing.
Is it difficult to get money for this kind of an organization?
We're not a line item on the town of Salisbury's actual budget, so we rely basically on the generous people of the town of Salisbury. And they are very generous.
They should be. It's a wonderful service.
That's true, but, you know, I'm sure other squads aren't as, our town is very, very generous. If we need an ambulance, you know, we really don't have a whole lot of trouble finding the money for that. We have grants that we apply for. We've gotten quite a few equipment on grants. We have had gifts, big gifts. We were given $20,000 by a family in memory of their parents for ten new AEDs.
What's an AED?
Defibrillator.
Oh, okay.
Automatic defibrillator. And they're scattered around town in strategic places and in some people's cars to be able to go as a first responder. Anything the state gives us, we apply for. Anything the government gives out, we go and get. We have a good relationship with Westover Air Force Base. We got our 1963, I think it was a Korean War rescue truck from them, the green one.
Oh.
And so we got that from Westover Air Force Base. So we try to look for deals.
Well, you have
extra
to.
Extra surplus.
You have to. What would be like a daily routine? Somebody gets a call. What do they do?
All right. Well, there's a couple of different things that they would do. The tones go off, and you're told to go to wherever. Now, some folks, depending on where they are in town, they have to leave jobs, they have to leave their families, they have to make sure everything's kind of closed up.
And they actually do that.
They actually do that. They, you know, make sure that, you know, the door's locked at the office, or they have to leave wherever they leave. They can either come here to get an ambulance or a rescue truck, depending on the call, or they can go right to the scene as a first responder. We like if people, at least one person goes to the scene, because then they can find out what's going on, they can find out whether we need one ambulance, two ambulances, whether we need the rescue truck. Or if they come here, they drive the rescue or the ambulance to the scene.
How do they communicate?
We have radios. Part of our grant programs, we have radios and pagers for every squad member. We can actually talk to each other back and forth. We can talk to our dispatch unit, which is Litchfield County Dispatch. They tone us out. They tell us what the emergency is, where it is. And we kind of think in our minds, okay, what do you need? And we take whatever we need. If it's just an ambulance to the rescue truck and the gators and all of our mountaineering equipment, whatever we need, we take. We stage at some areas, like under Mountain Trail, if it's a walk in the woods for the Appalachian Trail. It just depends on what goes on. Then the ambulance gets to the scene. We do whatever we need for patient care and transport, get them in the back of the ambulance, take them to Sharon Hospital.
Okay.
Whatever amount of care they need in between.
How do you recruit people?
Recruit. Word of mouth, for the most part. Every year we run an EMT class. So we're fortunate that I'm an EMS instructor for the state of Connecticut, and every year we run a new class, and then we run a refresher class, because every 2 to 3 years our members have to refresh between 50 and 75 hours of additional classroom skills and activities, new knowledge, whatever the state and the federal government have decided is the best, you know, the latest and the greatest kind of thing. Got to think for that.
Has the amount of knowledge or procedures changed a great deal over the years?
Absolutely. When the first ambulances came out, it was load and go. Mm-hmm. Now it is basically from getting to the scene to the general impression of the patient and deciding what you need for the patient, being able to care for that patient, whether it be just by oxygen or by splinting or by needing a paramedic, by needing LifeStar, by knowing that we need a gaiter to get to the bottom of Sage's Ravine, or, you know, it's a lot more of thinking and not necessarily diagnosis, but knowing what emergency care fits to your patient, whether they be a trauma or a medical.
There's a lot of requirements for this, isn't there?
There's a huge amount of requirements, and the state continues to put on additional requirements with a limited amount of money. It takes a lot of time.
It does take. That was the one thing that I was not aware of, is how much training, how much equipment, and how much time it takes. And so for having 50 people that are so dedicated, it's quite a remarkable operation.
It's very remarkable, and we do not have a lot of turnover. The most turnover we have is people who move out of the area or they retire. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, mm-hmm. they become, there's usually some kind of physical limitation that, you know, they can't lift anymore, they hardly can walk anymore, or whatever. But most people stay on the squad, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or more.
That's
We've got
remarkable.
A lot of people on the squad.
That is remarkable. And I know from personal experience, having a neighbor show up mm-hmm. makes the comfort level rise.
Absolutely.
Because, oh, it's somebody I know. They're going to take care of me. And you kind of let go of some of the anxiety.
Right.
If you're, whatever is happening, because it's a neighbor. Somebody knows me. Somebody's going to take care of me. They're not going to let me lay on the side of the road.
Right. And that you know, are all around the rural sections of, you know, up here in the northwest corner. I mean, we know our neighbors. So that's the best part about this, is that you're helping your neighbor.
What does the board of directors do?
The board of directors, for the most part, fundraise, and they investigate maybe buying ambulances, buying rescue trucks, trying to work deals with that. One of our people on our squad is our insurance agent, so he's able to find the best insurance for us.
Good.
Usually through, you know, other kind of firematic insurance companies.
Is there a number of hours that a person can be on call or on duty?
We try to make everybody at least be on between 6 and 12. Most people are on 24. Mm-hmm. Some people, like this past, on many weekends, we don't have set people that are covering the town. So you just sign up. Past weekend was my weekend. So basically, you don't go very far away from town, and if there's an ambulance call, you respond. You know, you do housework, or you mow your lawn, or whatever. Do some grocery shopping at Le Bon's.
Oh, yes,
you're hanging around in town.
Didn't you say that you were the coordinator for emergency services?
I'm the emergency management director for the town of Salisbury.
Which means what?
Which means that in any hurricane, snowstorm, tornado, anything to do with any emergency that comes up in town that's mostly weather-related for the most part. I, with Curtis Rand and the other selectmen, we formulate a plan and we
try to carry
it out. We have an emergency plan for the town of Salisbury. It's a state mandate that you have to have that. Between Curtis and I, we go to all the meetings that we need to go to, make sure that our town is safe. and basically any emergency. We had that, you know, week snowstorm, mm-hmm. and we were one of the few towns that actually cleared every road. We didn't have power, but we cleared every road so that we would have access to all the power lines. And we cleared every road so that people could have access to places that had power, yeah. like Millerton yeah. and Great Barrington and DeSharon Hospital. You know, making sure all of our residents could get out if they needed to get out.
What haven't I asked you that I should?
Hmm. I guess that the members of Salisbury Ambulance come from every walk of life. You don't have to be, you know, in the medical field. We have doctors and nurses on our squad. We also have carpenters and plumbers and electricians and school teachers and lawyers, dentists, insurance people, stonemasons.
Everybody.
Everybody. Everybody's on our squad. You don't have to, you just have to have a talent for empathy, a talent to, you know, want to give back to the community, basically, that, you know, everybody's
got to have. But it takes a special kind of person to be able to deal with blood and gore and traffic accidents and that sort of thing. Well, empathy is one thing, but it's another part of the forest.
That's true. I think 85% of our calls are probably the very run-of-the-mill, we call them heart attacks, or some kind of medical where there isn't any blood and gore.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very few calls where we have a fall or a motor vehicle accident or, you know, something that is very traumatic, you know, chainsaw to the leg or something.
Yeah.
And you just basically, you get through it. There are some people that don't like that. Mm-hmm. They are the people that aren't directly in contact with the patient. They're bringing the backboards over. They're bringing the cot over. So they don't have to deal with bandaging and splinting. So everybody kind of has a role.
And you have sort of predestined their role, so somebody that can't stand blood is not going to be taking a patient in that situation. You have
well, they
them
might.
Doing something else.
They might if they're, you know, there's a few people on the scene, but normally they would pick something else to do, like be the gopher
yeah.
or whatever. And, you know, if you can't drive the gator, then you're not going to be driving the gator up on the Appalachian Trail. If you don't like to walk, you're not going to hike to Bear Mountain to go get somebody who's broke their leg. If you're not trained in rescue for maybe a car accident, you're going to wait for the patient to be extricated out of the car, and then you'll be in the process of collaring a bat, boarding, splinting, all of that.
Then there is a bit of a choice as to what you do.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there's, you know, there's plenty of things to do here. Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely.
I know I wanted to ask you about the equipment which you covered, and I did ask you about junior EMTs.
We don't have any junior EMTs. There's a couple of different reasons. One, we bring in new members all the time, so we have a limited amount of people who can actually watch the new people mm-hmm. and make sure that they feel comfortable and safe, they stay safe, and that they, you know, their first call isn't a full CPR code or a major motor vehicle accident where somebody, perhaps it's a fatality. So we have like a mentoring system for the new adults that come in, which we've always had. And secondly, kids just don't need to see a lot of what we see. We basically, it's 18 to join and 21 to drive. 21 because our insurance says that it's a lot cheaper. But 18, you know, at some point there's a maturity level where you can actually see what we see and not be incredibly traumatized. You know, it's very trauma, you know.
It can be trauma.
You know, it's some of the, you know, our fatalities are very traumatic, especially if you have, at one point we had three SIDS babies in a row within a 6-month period.
Ooh.
And that just took its toll on the ambulance people. And we have critical incident stress debriefing after a major, you know, especially fatalities. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes together, we talk everything. Just knowing that, making sure that everybody realizes that you did everything you could to save the person. We use our brains, and we used every piece of equipment we could use. We got there in a timely manner. We did everything we could to save that person. And some people you're not going to save. You can learn CPR, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. you can't save everybody at CPR. We've saved quite a few people with CPR.
Yeah.
But other people, you know,
there's always a percentage.
There's always somebody that's going to not make it. And I think there's an age maturity level that just shouldn't see things like that if they don't have to. So we have enough problems just, you know, watching the new people that come in, you know, making sure that they feel comfortable and they feel part of the team.
In your squad, what's the percentage of men to women?
There's a few more women than men. I would go with about 60-40, probably. 60% women, 40% men.
And is that because of the empathy, or is it because of the jobs, or can you analyze that one?
It could be both, to tell you the truth. I don't know. I'm not really sure. We try to get, you know, we try to be, you know, non-sexist about getting people in. We have, you know, we try to pull in.
And everybody works together.
Everybody works together. We know that the common good is the patient. And even if, you know, even if there was a problem, it's still,
the patient comes first.
And, you know, we will, you know, work together unbelievably well. I mean, you have to, and you have to trust. Because if I'm hanging off a rope at Sage's Ravine, I want the people who are belaying me down, you know, over the cliff to, you know, I should be able to trust them, you know, that they're going to safely belay me down to the patient.
Well, this group has been together for a number of years. Mm-hmm. So
we just had our 40th anniversary.
That's a long time. So there has been a great degree of trust built.
Correct.
It's a wonderful, wonderful organization.
Well, most people, I think, quite a few people grew up here. But then there's other people who mm-hmm. moved into the area. And I think what they're trying to do is give back to the community. I mean, at least me, give back to the community in a way I can of the community that raised me.
Yeah.
Because my parents, when I was young, were very, they did a lot of things. I mean, they were always in the community. They volunteered their time, and they instilled in the four of us that you should volunteer back to your community. And myself and all three of my siblings all volunteer where they live and in whatever they do.
I think this is a silly question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
No questions are silly.
Do you do anything for a volunteer for the town other than the ambulance? I mean, do you do SWASA? Do you do any of the other activities?
I do help with SWASA when they need extra help. I also were on a couple of boards in town. I was on the Extras board. I was on the Salisbury Association board. I work very closely. I work in the summer times for the recreation department, for the town recreation department. I teach swimming lessons and I teach the lifeguards at Lake the Lake. I teach kayaking. At the high school, I coach swimming and girls and boys varsity swimming. So I try. We also through Salisbury Ambulance we do first aid classes and CPR classes for different people. The Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts come over and do their first aid badges through us. I'm active in my church, St. Mary's. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to keep busy and out of trouble kind of thing, more so than anything else.
I think you probably have succeeded, Jackie.
Definitely.
Thank you so very much.
Oh, you're
this
welcome.
This has been wonderful.
Excellent. Thank you.